people think you're way crazier than the craziest mm-hmm. idea that Trump has. Mass deportation is seen as far less crazy than men can become women. Sorry, it's true.
Welcome to Rivera and Rees, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense.
Hey, friends. Welcome back to another episode of Rivera and Rees. I'm Masady, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
And we also have today our friend Amanda Peterson, because we're going to be talking about this. Is this a peace deal? Is that the appropriate way to categorize it?
It's a, I don't know, end of the war. End the Gaza
end
war.
End of the war. Okay.
I'm not going to use the term peace to describe the Israel-Palestine situation anytime soon. But okay. Hopefully it's good.
Okay. Well, the president is definitely wanting, he is selling it as the ultimate peace deal. He is, what is the, what do you call it? The Nobel Peace Prize, isn't that mm-hmm. like in 2 weeks or something yep. like that on a Friday? So are they announcing the nominations or are they announcing the winners?
I think it's the nominations.
Okay. I have no idea.
He wants it. He wants it real bad.
He wants it big time. Yeah, very bigly. Much so. Okay.
Bigly.
All right. Well, before we get into today's episode, if this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button on whatever platform you're listening to, because now we're on Substack. We're on Substack, Apple Podcasts, and now on YouTube. But if Woo-hoo! You become a paying supporter, you will get this early before anyone else, ad-free, video exclusive on Substack, and then the next day you'll get it on YouTube. Also, programming message. Next week, I don't know if we're going to be here because we can't, I mean, I'm not going to tell you exactly what's going on because it's a surprise, but Rachel and I have a surprise situation going on, and this requires me to travel, and since I do the editing, I'm not going to be available because literally travel days are record days. So Stop. It is very possible that you
that
will
That doesn't
not...
mean, though, that doesn't mean that we're not going to be, like, around and in yeah. your feed and showing you things.
And we might even have an episode by the end of the week, but it really just depends on timing and scheduling and stuff. So if we are not in your ear next week, it's nothing happened. It's just it's like a timing conflict yeah. issue, all right? But yeah. we will be back. So what are we talking about today? Today, we're going to talk about, there is a lot of news. We are completely aware of government shutdown drama, of sombrero meme gate,
yes.
of, I don't even know what else is going on. There's so much going on. But what we are focusing on today is the Israel-Gaza peace deal negotiation that was announced, what was it, on Monday that they had yep. their meet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we sat on it for a few days to kind of let it develop. And I believe today or tomorrow the deadline for Hamas to respond?
I think Trump gave them 3 to 4 days.
Okay.
And that may have been too much time. But I mm-hmm. heard that the Hamas operatives in Qatar are basically locked in their hotel rooms and the Qataris won't let them do anything or go anywhere.
What, like they're in a timeout or something?
Like they're yeah, like you like aren't coming like, out until you yeah. agree to this.
Well, and I don't know that they're going to agree because there's mixed reporting going on. In my opinion, I think genocide talks should be unequivocally stop when they're mulling over not ending this so-called genocide. It's probably not a genocide. I don't know what else. There's never been a genocide in human history where this party being genocided could stop it and chooses not to.
Yeah, that doesn't really make sense.
It's just that term.
Well, just to give everybody a quick rundown on what it was. So Trump and Bibi had a meet on Monday. And I thought that was really interesting because even when Bibi initially came in and Trump greeted him, the press yelled to them, the gaggle was like, do you think we'll have a peace deal? And he spoke very positively saying, yeah, I think so. So there was a lot of reports that Trump was kind of was putting pressure on Bibi to mm-hmm. come to some type of agreement for this peace deal. And
previous to that, to this meeting, the Israel had, I don't know, is attack. It wasn't an attack on Qatar, but it was a strike on Hamas leaders within Qatar. And I believe a Qatari service member was killed in that attack. Is that correct? So part of it was a request for Bibi, which I have a picture here. This is Trump calling the Qatari government. And I find Bibi's face kind of funny in this particular picture. Following this conversation, I believe he was asked to apologize or to acknowledge. Like, what was the readout of that conversation?
I think part of how President Trump got the Qataris to try and end it. Well, I think that that strike, even though it was unsuccessful in taking out Hamas leadership, it put enough pressure on the Qataris to say, okay, we've got to end this because now we're in the line of fire for Israel. But I also think that it really bothered the administration that Israel, it bothered the Gulf states that Israel did that, because the Gulf states, what they want to show themselves as like the pinnacle of security and stability in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. And Qatar got bombed by Iran and Israel within the span of 3 months. So that's not like a pinnacle of security and stability. In my opinion, that just kind of goes to show as we move to a more maybe multipolar world, I don't think we're quite there. These so-called middlemen are going to be the ones that feel the most heat. So Turkey, Qatar, Ukraine, Taiwan, not that they're all middlemen, but like they either sit in an ambiguous area or they try to be the middle. They try to be Switzerland. And also Qatar is just outclassed. They're not Switzerland. They don't have the skill really to be, but okay. So yeah, so Qatar got struck. They want the war to end. I think everybody's wanted the war to end for a long time. Mm-hmm. Israel's facing like really no pushback in their campaign going into Gaza City. We're not really seeing reports of like ambushes on IDF or anything like that. We are seeing reports that yesterday Hamas launched 5 rockets from northern Gaza into southern Israel. They don't do that much anymore. We also saw a report yesterday that 3 Hamas operatives were arrested in Germany for plotting to carry out attacks on Jewish either embassies or the synagogues or something in Germany. They don't seem to want peace. I don't know.
So these particular, like these 2 incidents that you just brought up, is that, because as far as I know, the Hamas leadership, air quote, that still remains is like second rung leadership. Like their top guys are pretty much all gone. Is that, incorrect?
Their top military guys are all gone. I don't know what iteration they're on for military leadership, maybe like the 3rd or 4th rung down. For political leadership, I think only Ismail Haniyeh was assassinated in Iran like a little over a year ago. So all of the political leadership is kind of still intact, and they want this war to go on as long as possible so that they can show Israel.
Because I was just curious if those 2 situations were maybe, I don't know, just people acting out, wanting to continue to push it, or if it was still coming from a leadership position giving orders to, you know, do this plan in Germany and the attack in Israel.
The plans in Germany are probably the political leadership that lives outside that is doing that. For now, I think the way they rolled out this plan, showing that all of the Arab states basically are in support of it. Europeans are in support of it. The Trump administration's in support of it. Israel agreed to it. All of these talking points, I do agree that there's been tension between the U.S. and Israel to some extent, just because it's a long war and Israel's got a kind of chaotic political field to navigate. I mean, you've got people who anytime Israel talks about doing a deal and not mass expelling people, that they just say, well, we're going to leave the government and force an election. So Bibi's got to keep them in line, but then he's kind of got to get this deal done, kind of chaotic. So there's a lot of moving parts here. But the fact that everybody's come out in support of this plan and Hamas still is dragging their feet is not a good sign.
Well, and some of the details of it's a 20-point plan. And this is just a few of the details. It says hostages released in 72 hours, which we're still waiting for that. Disarmament. There's is it the peace board or peace, like the board itself? What is it called again?
The board of peace.
Board of, it's something peace. I don't.
which
Trump is going to tear it, and Tony Blair is going to be on it. Yeah,
correct. And then $50 billion from the Arabs for reconstruction. And I also think like the idea with the Hamas leadership that's still there, they're essentially kind of given asylum. Like they're told that they have to leave Gaza, but then go where?
Tunisia, Indonesia, Malaysia, somewhere that does not share a border with Israel. Because the Egyptians don't want them, the Lebanese, the Syrians, the Jordanians.
Who is going to pay for all of that? Because they basically said, if you stay here, you're going to be considered a militant, right? So who is paying for all that travel? Yeah. Like, those are the weird
probably
things
Israel.
That they would. Okay.
Or the Arabs. Well, also, all of the Hamas leadership are billionaires. So if they wanted to, I'm sure that they could figure. I mean, each of them, if you look up, they're all worth like $6 billion because they steal the money that we all give them. So, but I'm sure that they will say that they can't pay to relocate. So I'm sure Israel will do that, or the Arab states or something. I think if they want to stay in Gaza and just pledge that they won't be militants, they're allowed to do that under the plan. And I don't really know how you
enforce that or check that or verify.
Well, I don't know. Here's the thing with these timelines. They're specific, but they're vague. One of the reasons Hamas might be taking a minute is because I don't know how organized they are with where they're keeping all of the hostages and if they have all of the locations. So right now they're saying, well, we lost two of them, which is just horrific to think about. But also, like, they're trying to buy time saying, well, we don't know where everyone is because it's so chaotic. And so once they officially accept, then that's when the 72-hour clock is supposed to start. And they're supposed to exchange all of them at once. And then Israel would back to a line from where they are now. And then the other thing that's kind of difficult with this is that there would be an interim security force made up of, I think, American contractors, so not formal U.S. military, and the United Arab Emirates, which the Arabs would pay for, I think. Okay, well, do we have coalition forces ready? Right. I don't think that we do. I mean, we have some there from, like, again, American contractors doing the Gaza Humanitarian Fund. They've got to go through and start getting all of these, like, ammunition, guns, every single, like, American or, like, basically American or Israeli that I talk about that goes into Gaza. They all talk about how, like, every house you go into here has weapons. They have guns or something. The IDF has cleared a lot of those, not all of those. They also haven't cleared the tunnels. So I don't really understand how fast can you get a coalition force like that together? I don't know. So there's a lot of things that are kind of up in the air with this. I guess we just can hope.
I've heard rumors because this was Monday. It's now Thursday that we're recording this. And I have heard some rumors that Hamas is considering rejecting this deal. I'm thinking, I don't know, that it's not, which I don't even think. I think it's actually pretty generous for Hamas when you do it in comparison to Israel. I mean, I could be wrong, but my question is, like, if I'm to understand that all of these Arab states are backing it and supporting it and saying that they're going to provide some forces and some money to it, and then Hamas is saying, I'm going to go ahead and I think we're going to take a pass or try and renegotiate some details. When all of these Arab states have endorsed it, is that just them on their own? Or do you think somebody's in their ear telling them, you know, you don't really have to accept this. We'll still back you because they don't want to have to get dragged into the situation. You know, like the UAE or Egypt, for example, they're posturing to make it look like to the public that they want this peace deal, but they don't really want to have to make the investment or get tied into the Palestinian issue. And so maybe on the back channels, they're kind of like sabotaging it. This is just me theorizing here and questioning.
That's what, like, a lot of people in pro-Israel spaces have thought Qatar is doing this whole time, is sabotaging it. In my opinion, I think if we look at the media landscape with a lot of people here who have become so radicalized on the Israel-Palestine issue because of horrific images of war they've seen for 2 years, that is 10 times worse in the Arab world. They want this over because all of their people who don't necessarily vote in elections, but they don't like to see other fellow Arabs being like in war. Like, I don't think anybody really likes to see that, but they don't, they want this to end because they want stability. And I also think, while it used to be the Saudis and other Gulf states would kind of see a benefit, I guess, in a weird way, they would fund some of these radical groups and say, well, if we fund them, we have control over them. Or, oh, well, maybe this would kind of destabilize America a little bit and get them to leave. Now, I think a lot of them have come around to seeing, like, if we want stability and we want prosperity and we want to be big players moving forward, we can't have these radical terror groups. They fixed the problem kind of in Syria. I mean, that's not really, I don't know. I mean, Hamas is kind of the one big terror group left that could like really cause a lot of chaos. And if we believe them that they don't want chaos anymore, and I do, then they want the Hamas issue solved too. It's just, it's complicated to solve it because Hamas, should Hamas believe that Israel wouldn't come after them?
I mean, should Israel believe that Hamas is going to, like, maintain? That's the problem here. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
nobody trusts. The sides can't trust each other. So you want to have new people come in into the middle. At the end of the day, can we trust the middle? I don't know. Israel's done this before where they, you know, went out into any corner of the world and killed any member of, like, Black September, for instance, who did the Munich attacks at the Olympics.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Like, at what point does Hamas just say it's not worth it to give back all of the hostages because we're going to die anyway? I don't know, but like that's why this is a hard conflict to solve. You know what I mean? When people just say, well, Israel should just stop. And if they just stop, then Hamas will stop. That's not true. That is not true at all. And I guess if Hamas rejects the deal, I think it won't go back into like an all-out war. I think what I'm seeing is that the plan will still move forward without the hostage exchange and without Israel moving out. And then this interim force would just go into the areas that Israel already controls, which is 80% of the Gaza Strip. And so then the Gazans living in the 80% zone, or Gazans living there, can choose. Do you want to live in the area of chaos, or do you want to live?
Is that this map that was put out by the administration? Yeah. Is that what you're talking about here?
Yes.
With these different lines, which I cannot read because I have old eyes.
I can explain this a little bit. So right now within the blue lines, which is from Khan Yunis to Gaza City, that is a lot of that's the Al-Mawasi humanitarian corridor right now. So that's where a lot of people have been this whole time. That is what Israel has not gone into yet. They, I think, control up to that line. If Hamas accepts this deal, Israel will immediately pull back to that yellow line when they do the hostage exchange. If Hamas rejects the deal, Israel will continue occupying that. Interim forces will come in whenever they're available. That is, again, the U.S. contractors and the UAE, I think is the plan. Again, some of this is vague, so we don't really know.
Yeah.
And that's where the peace council of Tony Blair is going to take over. I don't know why I think it's so funny that I get, he really likes to work with American Republican presidents. Because he's the prime minister.
Like, why him? Can I just insert a comment here? Like, why Tony? That was my first thought when I saw a big headline. I wondered, why him specifically? Do you have a read on that?
I think he's been involved behind the scenes. I think he might be a trustworthy voice. I mean, you couldn't have Keir Starmer or somebody, you know, but like, you couldn't have any, I mean, like, this is kind of the problem. We need an interim government there, but everybody in our governments has our own problems to deal with. I mean, right. President Trump can chair the committee, but he's got America to worry about. Israel's got Israel to worry about. We cannot trust the Palestinian Authority. We can't. And so who's it going to be? Tony Blair, I guess, has enough respect. I guess know why after he made the decision to go into the Iraq war alongside the U.S. But I guess he's the guy. I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of pushback on him, like from just in general. Like, everyone's like, oh yeah, Tony Blair, good jobs.
Well, just it's not like the president. I mean, he may have actually wanted to put his son-in-law, like Kushner, yeah, in there, and that would have been very scandaloso. Like, that would never have
gone over well.
Like, would not have been well.
But speaking of Jared, Jared was the architect of the Abraham Accords. He's super well respected. When he left the Trump administration, the reason he doesn't have a formal role this time is because he started a fund, like an investment fund, to basically help develop, from a real estate perspective, from a tech perspective, all of these areas of the Middle East. And they don't have as much red tape there as we have here. So Saudi Arabia is well on its way to, you know, providing all of this power for AI and all of that. Like, they're going to be a major player. That's what they want. So they really, really, really trust Jared Kushner. And I don't think it's a coincidence that a week or two after we started to see headlines that Kushner was staying at the same hotel as Bibi, and no, he's kind of hanging out with Witkoff. I don't think it's a coincidence that we have this plan here. And I do kind of wonder, I've not seen anything reporting on this, but I wonder if Tony Blair is kind of involved with Jared Kushner's fund that he's running now, or is helping advise in some way.
I mean, I'm sure this entire development didn't come out of nowhere, and they didn't just go like the day before to Tony Blair and say like, no, hey, you want to lead up this board for us? Like, I think it was kept on the down low, but that Tony Blair's had his fingers in it in some way, or has been, I shouldn't say fingers in it because that sounds, but like, he's been participating in these negotiations in some form or another, you know, like he
right.
probably proposed a good chunk of them too. It's not like they did this whole plan and they're like, let's just pick someone from this hat and randomly offer them this job. But if this peace deal, or even if the peace deal doesn't work out, like, is this an acceleration maybe of the Abraham Accords or Abraham Accords?
Get it right, Miss Sadie. Abraham.
I'm really skeptical of other countries joining the Abraham Accords, much more skeptical than most other people in my position. Maybe I shouldn't be so skeptical, because if they're all going to come out formally endorsing this plan, and then either Hamas accepts or rejects it, that would kind of show that we're maybe on the 1 yard line that they would do something. But I'm pretty skeptical of other countries joining the Abraham Accords, just because the whole point of the Abraham Accords was like, okay, we know you guys hate the Israelis and you hate the Shias in Iran, but the Israelis have a really good military and the Iranians are super aggressive towards you. So maybe if the U.S. is backing out, you guys can just put aside your hatred for the Israelis because of this really massive threat of Iran. Well, that massive threat of Iran has kind of been taken out by the Israelis
right now. So now what's the incentive structure?
Right. So now they have more time to focus on these kind of lower issues. And also Turkey is kind of reemerging itself as a superpower in the Middle East. I mean, they're heavy backers of Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, which is now the leadership of the new regime in Syria. It's kind of weird to me.
You mentioned Turkey, and I didn't bring this up, but the president of Turkey, president or prime minister, president of Turkey, right? Mm-hmm. Came to the United, like he met with Trump, I think it was the week before Bibi came out, right?
Yep.
What did you think of that meet? Also, I saw a moment there where did the president kind of poke at him about about elections?
He knows about stolen elections because Turkey, their elections are not really up to American standards. We'll call them that. I mean, they're kind of sham elections. Yeah, I mean, it's a poke that like only Trump would get away with saying. Mm-hmm. Only he would say it. Anybody saying, oh, he just loves dictators and he just is so infatuated. No, I mean, can you imagine any other American leader would talk super tough on Turkey and then like try and have a stern handshake moment with him or something when they visit? But like, Turkey's a NATO partner. They have the largest military outside of the United States in NATO. Like, there's some, I don't know. We're not kicking Turkey out of NATO. We're not doing that. Everybody wants to do that. We're not doing that. Greece would hate that. But okay. So Turkey, Trump will act buddy buddy with him, but also poke him. And it's kind of, I think it's funny. But
was he here, do you think, to kind of set up and have some conversations specifically on this Israel-Gaza deal?
Well, I mean, I think they probably talked about this. I also think that they talked about Russia-Ukraine. Turkey plays both sides in that, but Turkey's been a big, like, when we're talking about peacekeeping forces, and it doesn't look like the Ukraine war's going to end anytime soon now. Russia clearly is not interested, and actually they want to seem to expand to NATO countries. But when they were talking about peacekeeping forces, it would have been Turkish peacekeeping forces, more likely than not. Turkey's also weird because they have one of the longest relationships with Israel, like normal kind of ties with Israel of any majority Muslim country. But at the same time, anytime there's a war, especially when it's Erdogan, they really pull back and say, oh, we hate the Israelis. They don't fully pull back, you know, like they haven't like cut formal ties or any. Well, they have kind of cut formal ties this time, but it's a big deal to get. I don't know when, in my opinion, when these wars are happening, it makes it really hard for Turkey that wants to appear as a democracy that really isn't one to be supporting Israel. And so they'll kind of do this kind of performative thing. I think that it's complicated. As
I was just curious about Turkey since you had mentioned it. But I wanted to play this because this was during the press conference that really wasn't a press conference after Trump and Bibi had their meet. And in this clip, Trump's, which he's actually kind of changed his tone to with Ukraine and Russia, where all of a sudden he just seems to be supporting Ukraine. And we see something very similar here with Israel. So let me play it real quick for everybody.
Thousands of years, I think you can probably say, if you really look into it, if you study back, if you're a scholar, you would say thousands of years, Israel would have my fallback into finish the job of destroying the threat of Hamas. But I hope that we're going to have a deal for peace. And if Hamas rejects the deal, which is always possible, they're the only one left. Everyone else has accepted it. But I have a feeling that we're going to have a positive answer. But if not, as you know, Bibi, you'd have our full backing to do what you would have to do. Everyone understand elimination.
So I have a question about that. I have a question. What exactly do you think that means? But also when I believe it was in Bibi's response to that, when he basically said, we can do this the easy way or we can do this the hard way. What does the hard way mean?
War.
Just full. I mean, like, yes, but full on.
Are they just going to keep bombing?
Are they going to disregard the hostages that are still being held in the pursuit of getting every single Hamas player? How does that work?
They can't, because the generals in Israel won't listen to Bibi if he tells them to do that. I think another thing that people in America don't really understand is, like, we have a command structure where, like, the president, what they say goes. Uh-huh. The generals in Israel can push back and often do push back against the prime minister. It's not as cut and dry. So this idea that Bibi's just going to make the generals won't listen. So that should not, I don't like that talking point, because it, in my opinion, it's people trying to demonize Bibi. And I think that you can be critical of Bibi and also understand that that's just not going to happen. What he's saying with that, though, I don't know. I think we've been under this kind of neoliberal delusion in the West, and maybe Trump was under it too a little bit, where it's like, oh, well, I mean, we can all just kind of come together. We all want to make money. Nobody really wants the wars to happen.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a deal to be made here, right? Because they don't want this to keep going. Hamas kind of wants something. Like, we can give them something that they want to stop the war. I think what we need to kind of realize is that what we're dealing with right now is an axis of aggressors, of revisionists who actually want these wars to continue going on at low grade levels because they want to demoralize the West and not have us be like, I don't know. I mean, if they want this war to keep going on, they want the war to keep going on. You know what I mean? Like,
you're talking about Hamas.
Well, and Russia and all of the, like, I'm like worried about Pakistan with their like nuclear ambitions right now. Super. They're like a major ally of China. Saudi Arabia just signed a mutual defense agreement. I don't really think that that's that huge, but like,
in this press conference, when they're talking and Trump says that Israel will have the full backing of the United States if Hamas decides to reject the deal. Are we looking at another, I don't know, like he kind of said, used very similar language. He gave a deadline, and the next thing we knew, he was dropping a bomb on Iran. Like, are we looking at possibly the president or the United States being like, look, we're done with this foolishness. We're just going to like send some stuff in. We're going to put an end to this. Like, is that what we're talking about?
I don't think
not, so. Not with this. Not with this. The Israelis don't want our help, and they don't need our help. The Israelis can conquer that last remaining part of the strip. They can do that.
I mean, they have taken care of most of it.
I would be more worried about like U.S. action against Russia, which I actually think is like more and more likely as things go on.
Well, because they keep teasing about it, especially with like when we sent the Tomahawks to Ukraine, and they keep Peskov will keep saying stuff like this could be an act of war. It could be. So they keep floating this like potential that we're entering into this conflict with them.
Didn't we just like give permission for Ukraine to do strikes on Russian energy, like in Russia?
They've been doing strikes on Russian, but we gave them permission to do strike deeper into Russian territory. So right now, like we won't, for most of this conflict, we've been saying, well, we don't want to put Russian, you know, we don't want St. Petersburg or Moscow to be under threat because then they might go nuclear. And so we say, well, you can just strike, you know, not quite there. And I guess now, last night, the Wall Street Journal had a report out that we're giving them intelligence to strike deeper into Russian territory. And this also comes amid all of these, I don't know what we would call them, like they're calling them hybrid warfare. It's warfare. We just don't want to enter in the war. So they're doing all these drone swarms of major European military installations, airports, things like that.
Russia's in them.
But then it's like plausible deniability. It's like, well, but it was actually Singaporean Chinese people doing it. And it's like, no, it's
you.
Liar. Well, I mean, Russia and China's an axis. I mean, it's like enough.
It says Russia on the drone. Like, we saw the drone. Well, it's like, it has your flag on it.
Where would they have gotten these drones? Who uses drones all the time?
From your bestie, Russia, like China.
Yeah. So are these the reports, because I've only been following this on the edges, but like, are these the reports of Russia basically doing incursions on NATO countries, but NATO's not responding because they don't want to accelerate the situation, which then is, if anything, is just kind of like an incentive structure to let Russia keep agitating these NATO countries. Like, am I misreading that?
No, I think you're reading it correctly. But then I think that there's two kind of things to this. Okay. We in the West built up the most incredible planes and expensive missiles and all of this stuff that we can. And it's really expensive to operate that equipment to take down a $20 drone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so this is going to turn into a financial situation. And this is kind of what Israel's been dealing with. You know, Israel has this Iron Dome, which can intercept, you know, $20 or $200 rockets that Hezbollah or Hamas makes out of water pipes or something. And it costs $60,000 to intercept one of these things. Mm-hmm. And so right now, I was just listening to a report from the President's Daily Briefing podcast, where he was talking about how right now Europe is trying to enmesh their missile defense system, or like drone defense systems, to prevent drone swarms in a cheap way. One thing that they could do would be to buy the Iron Beam technology that Israel says will have operational in a few months, which will, instead of cost $60 or $60,000 to intercept a missile or something, it'll cost like $3 worth of energy or something like that.
Because it's a laser instead of a missile.
Yeah. And then now the problem with that is, does Israel want to export that right away? Maybe not. And can they do that? Maybe not. Do they want to the Europeans who have been at their throat over the Gaza war the whole time? Maybe not.
Well, especially considering that they just like recognize the Palestinian state, which is like,
right. Well, that too is just kind of a diplomatic. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it's still ridiculous.
I don't know. It's a bad look, but it means nothing in the grand scheme of things. And then the fourth thing is like, hey, Europe, why weren't we doing this the last 3 years? What
Well, so then what about the United States? Because if we have all of these giant pieces of equipment, and now what we're doing is potentially fighting against drone swarms, which actually, if I'm not mistaken, I saw a Reuters report recently of some contract between China and Russia for drones. Was it was it China and Russia that like Russia had signed a contract to have China develop drones for them, like these, which is the same thing that they've been using for these swarms?
There's been a couple different reports like that. There was also a report, I think, that came out of the Washington Post recently that said that basically China's going to use Russia's help to land basically these like flying aircraft that could land military style assault like vehicles on Taiwan so that they wouldn't have to do the amphibious operation. They could do it by air. So a couple things on that. We have to understand Russia's weapons development's not great. It's been 3 years and they've got like 15% of Ukrainian territory and they're losing like hundreds of thousands of, they've lost maybe a million people total. I mean, like, I don't know. Russia's not like a great partner for this. And China hasn't fought a war since 1954. So, and most of their military stuff is stuff that they steal from us.
So are we doing drones? I guess that was going to be my question. Not enough. Okay. Well, that's
I listened to a podcast like maybe 3 years ago, ex-military, and he had on also another ex-military. And they were saying this like 3 years ago. They said, we need to restructure our defenses, basically. We're not going to be able to do these, you know, basically wars on land, you know, with tanks and missiles. The new age of war will be in the sky. It'll be drones. And they cost pennies in comparison to how we've been militarizing our equipment. And it's not going to cost, it's going to cost pennies and they're going to be way more effective. And we're not going to have the defenses we need if we don't start kind of pivoting and changing to this new way of warfare. And this was several years ago. And so I'd often wondered, are we preparing for that? Are we just kind of still in a like World War II mindset or even, you know, more recent conflicts? Are we not pivoting fast enough? Because I don't hear it talked about, I mean, really ever.
With the drone thing, I think there's two things to keep in mind. Like, military innovation happens during times of war, not times of, like, relative peace. And so we did see military innovation, but it was for lopsided wars, like in the War on Terror, where we were the clear, I mean, they couldn't really fight back against us. They could just ambush us. In an age of great power competition, maybe we don't have the tech. Maybe we're not innovating fast enough in the tech that we would need for that. But we can hopefully deter a conflict with China. And we have seen two wars going on recently that are kind of more peer conflicts. Well, you could call Israel-Iran a peer conflict. Even Israel and Hezbollah, you could call a peer conflict. But Russia-Ukraine, Ukraine's doing great with their drone manufacturing, you know?
Yeah.
They're doing incredible. So that's kind of another, when people say like, you know, oh, like Ukraine is terrible. They do nothing for us. Well, I mean, we're really behind on drones and Ukraine's pretty good on drones. So that's something we can get from them. There's also an American company called Anduril run by Palmer Luckey. And that's like an American drone manufacturing. He's like 31 and a billionaire now or something, like a big weapon or defense guy. I don't know. He's kind of big in like the tech scene. So, I mean, we know drones are important. We don't have the manufacturing capacity to rebuild them quickly. Same with like resupplying Patriot missiles and stuff. Israel just gave a bunch to Ukraine and they keep giving more. But like we drained 25% of our supply of Patriot interceptors during the 12-day Israel-Iran war. Like, and we don't have enough capacity to like replace those super fast. The Trump administration just did another overhaul where they're, sorry if this is really in the weeds. The Trump administration did another overhaul where they're allowing defense contractors to kind of take on like outside money maybe or change the procurement process so that we could hopefully ramp
speed up the process.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's kind of one of those things where, yeah, we're all sitting on our hands for the last 10 years saying, oh, well, this could be bad. And then nothing really kicks into gear until...
I mean, that part of that is a lot of like domestic politics, too, because especially, you know, if Democrats, you know, with... You know, we had Obama for a long time in charge. And then even during Trump's first administration, he was being held back. And then Biden came in. You know, the priority has always been against fortifying the military, which is one of the issues that we've had such a weakened military over the last, I don't know, like progressively weakening military over the last decade, not just in hardware, but also in, I mean, morale and recruitment issues recently.
Well, also, like, we just have to understand, like, Democrats see all of our federal agencies as jobs programs for their people. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of money that we put into defense contractors. And so, you know, they kind of strategically put these all over the country and, okay, we're going to manufacture this here and this here. And really, we're not really focused right now, or we hadn't been or haven't been focused on, okay, Taiwan's going to need these type of weapons and they're staring down the battle of a conflict. So let's move that up and make those first. You know what I mean? Ukraine mm-hmm. needs these now. Let's make these first. Instead, they're saying, well, you know, we're going to make those 3 years from now because, you know, this
contract with this friend or whatever.
It's yeah. And the other thing, we can blame Obama for a lot of it, and I'm not going to not blame him, but a lot of this happened under Bush 1. Because yeah. under Bush 1, it was like, okay, we need to cut spending. We don't need to be spending this much on the military anymore. And so let's figure out a way to do this as cheap as possible rather than to keep us as safe as possible and have the ability to like oversupply these weapons. And so I don't know. I hope with AI and like increased manufacturing, we can really drive this stuff up quick. But unfortunately,
so, kind of changing the tenor here and everything, what did you think of the Hegseth speech and calling and the like just the entire conversation around that? I got a few highlights here first before you give us some tidbits. So I'm gonna play some Hegseth here.
Yeah.
If the Secretary of War can do regular hard PT, so can every member of our joint force. Frankly, it's tiring to look out at combat formations or really any formation and see fat troops. Likewise, it's completely unacceptable to see fat generals and admirals in the halls of the Pentagon and leading commands around the country and the world. It's a bad look. It is bad, and it's not who we are. So whether you're an airborne ranger or a chairborne ranger, a brand new private or a four-star general, you need to meet the height and weight standards and pass your PT test. And as the chairman said, yes, there is no PT test. But today, at my direction, every member of the joint force at every rank is required to take a PT test twice a year, as well as meet height and weight requirements twice a year. This also means grooming standards.
So that's like a 2-minute clip, but I'm not going to go through the whole thing right now. But I mean, most his speech encompassed like, back to new standards, women, all of the physical standards being up to men. And then if women can make it, cool. If not, you can't. What was interesting about this in particular is that when this meeting was called, he's not talking to enlisted here. He's talking to all of the leadership, military leadership, generals, admirals, all of the officers that are leading these enlisted men. And so typically, you know, they don't have to do PT, and they're the ones that would enforce certain standards and would be very dependent on morale. And so there's been a really interesting conversation since this, like, is this just because Hegseth wants to come off and present himself as a leader and have an opportunity to throw his weight around on these generals and these officers, you know, conversations about how like, they were offended and how dare that this guy speak down to them. But I'm curious, like, because I know you listen to a lot of military focused content, like how was that speech received? And as is that part of this idea of fortifying the U.S. military, or is this just kind of like a performative moment?
I think there's a couple things going on with it. First, I think I thought it was hilarious that he was fat shaming generals. I think that's really funny. And I don't think that that's a bad thing. I think that's really funny. With all my vet friends, when I talked to them about like recruiting was down, right? And recruiting's back up. That could be just a good thing because they're feeling inspired and rah, rah. Most people, like our recruitment base comes from family of former military. So if your dad or your uncle or somebody had a really hard time, annoying time in Iraq and Afghanistan, they might just tell you, hey, look, like, these guys don't care about you. Don't enlist. Now, maybe this is making them better. But the generals tend to be more liberal. So that's like kind of the one thing. Like, normal recruits tend to be pretty conservative. The generals, like, once you get higher up in that class of the military, they tend to be more left-leaning. And so I think part of this was done to talk about, like, okay, I'm giving you an out here. If you want to resign from your position now, now's the time to do it, because we're going to have our next, like, military assessment come out in the next few weeks or months, like the defense strategy that every administration puts out. I think it's going to have some things that might bother some people. I think it's going to have us further drawing down our presence in Europe, because we see our European part, either because we hate Europe and we just want to be isolationists, some people will say, or because we are seeing our European counterparts step up to the task. And so now we understand that we need to focus on the Pacific. And so we might see that. And so this is kind of giving them an out of, like, okay, you want to leave. If you're not going to follow the rules with the next defense strategy that comes out, now's your time. Go. But I also think, I just, to me, the biggest thing about this speech is, like, the media coverage of it, where you have mainstream left-wing media are talking about this meeting as if the only reason they would do it is because Hitler called all the generals in at one point in the 90s. And, like, really, that is the only thing that they talk about with it. And it's like, people wonder how we're so divided. That was on NPR's Up First. NPR Up First is like, well, you know, Hitler did this, and so this is just another example of fascism.
And it's dangerous. It is dangerous. It's not just, like, laughable, stupid anymore. That was what it was maybe the first year they started having these talking points.
Which was, like, 5 years ago.
Yeah. At this point, this is, like, you're complicit in what happens. This is not okay. And it also isn't as unprecedented as they say it is. Like, it has happened before in our country's history, but they just, like, can't see it. Everything is bad. All of it. Everything is bad.
Well, it doesn't happen when it's televised, because normally we don't tell people that everyone's coming in.
Maybe that was the mistake, yeah.
but it's also, I don't know. I mean, it's another morale boost. I don't know. If people who are not joining the military because they're mad at the bureaucracy, and he calls in and yells at the bureaucracy, that's going to pump up recruitment numbers. It just is. It goes directly into the veins of, like, MAGA, where it's like, oh, we're calling out the woke DEI generals. Because how many videos were there under Biden of, like, you know, transitioning people saying, you know, I have a trans daughter and,
well,
I'm
even
in the
Millie. He did this whole speech about how he needed to be have some form of shame for being a white man, or had to recognize his. And it's just like, what are we talking about here? Like, this is not what is going to secure the country. And he also faced a lot of criticism for, like, spending the money to fly all of these officers over just so he could stand in front of them and have a speech. I'm like, well, I think people are more apt to pay attention if they're being summoned by the secretary, well, Secretary of War now, and the president who's going to speak, as opposed to a Zoom call that they can only, like, half pay attention to.
Right. So they want to make a statement. When you fly in people and make a statement, we're not a poor country. We can fly people into Quantico. It's not a massive security risk like they were talking about. We can protect our military. Like, we can do that. Do I think it's the greatest thing in the world and it's going to give us a 180? No. I think the only thing that would give us a 180 is increased manufacturing power and a weapons buildup. And that's all I think that matters. So, no, I mean, this doesn't make me feel like a great, like, way safer and, like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. But to call this,
well,
like,
and
a
I also
right
wonder if that view. whole situation was more for, I mean, obviously these were issues that needed to be addressed with the leadership, but, you know, the question of televising it is almost more of a recruitment opportunity, especially for enlisted, because what you're seeing there is your secretary is enforcing and calling out the officers that a lot of the enlisted have frustrations with, because a like, I can't even, I was actually talking, my husband was talking to a friend of ours that's former military. And one of the things that they comment on and love a lot is the fact that, you know, Hegseth does PT with the enlisted. And now that the officers are going to be required to do also some PT, like, it almost kind of, it's like a, it's a morale booster. So I'm wondering if, you know, it's kind of like checking off two things. Like, not only are you checking the officers, but you're also providing a morale boost for the enlisted.
Well, totally. And I think it, for me, when I watched it, I liked it. And I think it's going to be effective in a way because it's a return to normalcy. So when you see the media freaking out that he said, no more dudes in dresses, no more climate activism, none of this. Like, we're not going to do the pronouns. We're not going to do that. They freak out. And that's the signal that this is good, what happened. Because as I'm watching it, I'm thinking in my mind, I don't know why I went to this, maybe because it's almost Christmas. I kept thinking about White Christmas when at the end they call in all of these former military that served under the general that is now running the hotel. And they're just, I thought, if you told them what's happening in the military now, and the fact that there are these like transitioning military officers that are in their uniform on TikTok talking about what they're doing, and there's a whole bunch of really overweight, out of shape, upset, sad about life, like self-hating officers that are in charge of other military, they wouldn't recognize that. They wouldn't even understand, because it wouldn't, that would never happen. And so it's almost like a return to, just, you can't be fat and serve. You have to be in shape. We're not going to talk about, I'm serious. Like, I could not go serve in the military right now. Oh, but it's the truth. It really is. If I'm looking at arming a military to go fight in a conflict tomorrow, common sense tells me that people need to be in shape, both in their mind and in their body. And I know that these things are very, very difficult to navigate now, because everything is off limits to talk about. But the military should be like the one place where we should be able to say, I'm sorry, you need to be able to run a mile in under 15 minutes if you want to serve on the battlefield. I don't think
that's not fair, Rachel.
Well, then I'm unfair. And it was so no nonsense like that. Like, you're just not going to be able to do these things anymore, because that's not what we're here for. We're not here to coddle you, make you feel good, affirm you. We're here to protect our national security.
Well, in the conversation in the media, I found it really interesting because it again went and favored like authority. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, how dare this guy who's never reached the rank or the education that these officers have speak to them that way? And I'm just like, who freaking, I don't care. Like, who cares? It's just like, of all the things for the media to be worried about, that's what you're going to be worried about?
Yes, that's all they can worry about. Everything has to be sugar-coated and nice and make everybody feel good about themselves. And that's just not what the military is there to do. It seems very obvious. Common sense. This all seems very, it's a return to normalcy. And they don't like that because they don't want normal. They want abnormal and I don't even know the word. I don't know.
Weird.
Yes.
Do you know what's weird about all of that, though? Like, how they don't. I saw something. Like, Ezra Klein did the interview with that. Is he a BLM guy or a postmodern?
Oh, Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Yikes.
That was a yikes.
But you saw that. And then there was another interview. And I can't remember who tweeted this, but they were saying, like, it's very clear to me that the Democrats think that they're going to win kind of, you know, soon. And when they win, they're just going to go full woke, because that's what we did. We went full MAGA. Trump is doing things that I never would have thought that he would have done. And they think it's working for them, so it'll work for us. And it's like, no, I don't think what you guys understand is, like, people think you're way crazier than the craziest idea that Trump has. Mass deportation is seen as far less crazy than men can become women. Sorry, it's true. And so they're like, need to like keep this up with, like, no, actually, we're not in the wrong to push for trans rights. It's like, I don't know.
In the military, on top of that, because that's in this situation, that's what they're upset about. They're upset about, like, women not being able to be in combat when they're not physically capable. In the conversation about how dare he fat shame people, yes, he absolutely should be
fat shaming people in the military. We're not talking about a camera person or someone who's on the radio or whatever. We're talking about a military officer. And I know plenty of women who are wives to military who appreciated this
yes.
conversation in particular. Like, yes, it is important. Of course, we need to fortify our military with weapons and with technology, but it, you know, there also has to be the capability of those that are the analog capability of people to be on the ground and actually do these strategic operations. And I don't think it's insane for
it's
you.
Not, to, it's like, normal. It's normal.
Fit, even if you have a desk job, like, I don't think it's crazy for you to be at least healthy, because if push comes to shove, who knows what's going to be required for of you being in the military. So I don't get it, except for, again, you know, obviously there's a very difference of opinion on how they see the world, but doubling down on this, it was like when I recommended to you guys to watch that New Hampshire woman on
oh yeah
the morning meeting. I think it was like a day or two ago.
It was exactly what Amanda just said.
Yeah, which is basically like, look, I will go through this because what they're offering is so crazy. As parents, especially like Rachel, our age, when you have the memory of growing up in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And things just being like normal.
Uh-huh.
Like, those are people who are parents right now, and they just want things to be normal for their children. And that's right. what she was talking about. And yeah. I think all of this involves that. And so when you have people like Ta-Nehisi Coates or The View or anything like that being upset about the fat shaming, or, you know, how this is going to, you know, disproportionately hurt whatever group because we're not doing favors as opposed to focusing on merit. It's like, we just want to
go. I think being abnormal and being, they feel like being subversive is progressive and not the good. They think that being abnormal is the point. Anything that is traditional or smacks of something old to them is archaic and bad, because that's what we've been told. Everything in the past about America is bad. Only now are we enlightened. And that runs deep and it goes into everything. And so you get people just lying and saying, you know, he said women can't serve and he's anti-woman. And it's like, guys,
that's not at all what he said.
At all. But they have to lie because they don't have an argument otherwise, because what he said just kind of makes sense. Like, just don't wear a dress if you're a man, and maybe be able to do the pull-ups. Like we said, it's not difficult. It's really not. I can't try out for the military right now. I would walk in there and they laugh at me, and they should, because if I was on the battlefield, I would faint if I had to carry a backpack. This is good. This is why people like me shouldn't be in the military, and people like who are in the military should be in shape. That's all. It's very easy.
This is like what I was telling you guys before we started recording, so I'm sorry. But like, there's like the modernism and then postmodernism, and now there's this like metamodernism where it's like the bureaucracy. Yeah, the bureaucracy is stuck on postmodernism. Everything good is actually bad. You guys are bad for wanting normalcy. And then I think the reason Trump works so well is because it's, I don't know, normal modernism sounds like annoying 2002 era talking points of like, we just need to, I don't know. It just sounds corny and like weird. And then you got Trump doing the sombreros and actually we are going to troll you. Yeah. And it's like, it just works, because it's like, actually we need someone who's going to be an FU to the postmodernist people that think that they know everything and they really just like hate us. They hate us.
Well, and that's the whole administration is every one of them, for the most part, is kind of a middle finger to how we all feel like we've been treated. And they're just coming in. And sometimes, I mean, you know me, I'm a little bit, anyway, sometimes it bothers me. I'm like, okay, tone it back. Get professional, guys. But there is something about it where they're going, we're not taking this anymore. And if you're offended by it, come on. Because that was what the 80s was. That was what the 90s was. You were offended. People said stuff to your face and they were like, deal with it. Get over it. And that's how you kind of learn to deal with the world. It wasn't all like, let's sit down and have a kumbaya moment and talk about our feelings. It was, we have to deal with reality. Sometimes it's a mess. Get up, move on. And that's not how it's been. It's been a big struggle session. Well, I think it's just like there was just a huge swing in the opposite direction where it was just a lot of coddling and stuff like that. It's like, look, it was like there could be an in between. And the problem is like right now we have just gone like way, way too far with the like it's just ridiculous. But speaking of, because you mentioned it, we are in a whole new political war game here where and. I mean, it's been existing for a while, but I feel like this government shutdown has really exposed the political meme game. Mm-hmm. If you are online, you have to have seen, like, my feed has been flooded with sombreros. And it started because of this shutdown. Trump did where he posted, or he truth is what I should say, this meme. Let me find it if I can. Meme one. Yeah. All right. So this was the initial share, which Rachel hates. And I want to hear what Amanda thinks.
No way to sugarcoat it. Nobody likes Democrats anymore. We have no voters left because of all of our woke trans. Not even black people want to vote for us anymore. Even Latinos hate us. So we need new voters. And if we give all these illegal aliens free health care, we might be able to get them on our side so they can vote for us. They can't even speak English. So they won't realize pieces of shit, you know, at least for a while until they learn English and they realize they hate us too.
Okay. So for those of you who are listening and not watching, that is Chuck Schumer. And next to Chuck Schumer is Hakeem Jeffries in a sombrero hat with a superimposed mustache. And it got a lot of traction because first it was either racist or like, I can't believe he put out this AI video as if it wasn't obviously AI.
Oh my God. Did you see that with ABC?
Wait, yeah. They thought it was real?
No, but ABC put on...
It's just
on,
the language that they use.
They put on a label like, this is a digitally altered video. It's like, yeah, we know. Nobody thinks that that's
his
real.
His mustache was moving. Like, I think everybody is smart. Well, I don't know. It's 2025.
And then MSNBC was like, we're not going to show you this video because it's offensive. Brother. And it's fake. And it's like, yeah, it's fake. And it's not. How is that offensive? Why do you guys hate Mexicans so much that you can't deal with the sombrero? I don't understand.
Well,
like, I don't.
And I mean, clearly that meme is because they're arguing that this bill, this CR that the Democrats have proposed, is supporting and providing health care to illegal immigrants, which is why Hakeem is standing next to him in the sombrero with the mustache. Now, Hakeem Jeffries.
Amanda's laughing. She can't stop laughing.
This is so ridiculous. And it's Friday, though, so I wanted to talk about something ridiculous. So then,
is it Friday?
No, I mean, it's Thursday.
Okay. I was like, oh, yes. My gosh, sorry. I have so much work to do. Oh, my gosh.
But then, so Jeffries responds in the most Jeffries Democrat way possible. I don't know if you've seen this, Rachel.
Struggle sesh. Like, they they cannot handle any nuance.
Mr. President, allow me to reintroduce myself.
Maxine Waters.
I'm the House Democratic leader. Our caucus is 217 members strong. We serve in a separate and co-equal branch of government. We don't work for you, we work for the American people.
He's very proud of himself.
I know, like, what does this have to do with it?
To lower the high cost of living and to protect the health care of everyday Americans. And Mr. President, the next time you have something to say about me, don't cop out through a racist and fake AI video.
Racist.
When I'm back in the Oval Office,
get out of here.
Say it to my face.
Right. Okay.
Say it to my face.
Okay. Trump would say it to his face. That's the whole point. That's why no one's afraid of you, Hakeem. And you're, nope. That's it. I'm sorry.
No, so it's the fact that it's Maxine Waters behind him, like, tell him. And it's like, all of them are like,
well, and it
like,
just goes to show, like,
it's milk so dumb. Toast. It's so dumb.
Nothing.
Why are you having a press conference for this? It's a sombrero meme. Stop.
It's like
this
the kid like, that would get bullied in high school, you know? Yes. And like, they would take it way too seriously and be like, I actually didn't do anything wrong. And it's like, no, just laugh at the joke and they'll stop making the joke.
Yeah.
That's none of the Democrat caucus learned that.
It's so girly.
No. And that's the whole thing. It's the game right now, or whatever this battle that is going on right now, which I know it frustrates a lot of people. I get it. But also we're in a whole, we're in a different time. Different timeline, whole different like battleground here.
You don't have to like it to appreciate it.
To appreciate it.
You can appreciate the player. That's for sure.
And to see the contrast of how the administration is fighting this battle of messaging with the government shutdown versus the Democrats, that is like quintessential. That reminds me of when I was in like middle school. That is something that you would see on TV when I was in middle school, which was a very long time ago. All right. Mm-hmm. And then Trump's response was this.
Bigotry will get you nowhere.
Another meme.
We are fighting to protect the health care of the American people in the face of an unprecedented Republican assault.
I can't. All Donald Trump's in the back. Listen, you guys know I hate this. I hate it so much. I've hated it forever. I hate all the memes. I hate all the AI-generated things. But when they're going to act like that in response to something, then it's like game on. Like, you can't. Just be an adult. Pretend like it didn't even happen. Don't even say anything about it. That makes it go away. But you have to understand who you're dealing with here. And then, are you going to play the video of J.D. Vance at the presser yesterday?
I have J.D. Vance. Would you like to see how... So yes, the president was asked about this because this is very offensive and it's very juvenile.
It's very racist.
It's very racist. So we got to ask the vice president who was at yesterday's White House press conference, and he was asked about this particular issue.
Okay, go ahead and ask the second question.
So the president's been posting some images of Leader Jeffries and Senator Schumer.
I saw.
Recently. You've said that you're interested in good faith negotiations with these leaders, but, you know, what message does that send? Is it helpful to post pictures of Leader Jeffries in a sombrero if you're trying to have good faith talks with him?
Oh, I think it's funny. The president's joking, and we're having a good time. You can negotiate in good faith while also poking a little bit of fun at some of the absurdities of the Democrats' positions and even, you know, poking some fun at the absurdity of the Democrats themselves. I mean, I'll tell Hakeem Jeffries right now, I make this solemn promise to you that if you help us reopen the government, the sombrero memes will stop. And I've talked to the president of the United States about that.
It's brilliant. I mean, he's locking in that 2028 presidential run with all of his, you know, charm and ability to just deflect, because they wanted him to be like, well, maybe apologize. And he's like, no, it's just, we're just having fun. This is, get over yourselves, guys. Not everything. Don't cry. Don't cry.
Well, I was scrolling after this. And then, so after Jeffries gets all upset about the meme, I should have pulled it, but he ended up taking that same clip of J.D. Vance. And then, like, as J.D. Vance is talking, you know, the chubby J.D. Vance face that is like meme that trends. So that starts to superimpose over his face, but it's not talking. It's just like that weird cabbage patch face. And that was his attempt after he gotten all offended, after he did that whole production, to then now meme J.D. Vance.
Also, J.D. Vance uses that meme about himself.
I know.
All the time.
That's why it's great, because they all make fun of themselves. It's awesome.
Well, and that's my point, is like Jeffries tries to, then he's like, okay, well, now I need to kind of, I need to respond. Let me do a response. And he uses a meme that literally every right wing account on X and the vice president himself has used of J.D. Vance. So if you're like, it's not an own, it's another miss. It's just ridiculous.
It's just like they don't know how to plan the meme more. Did you guys see like Gavin Newsom's response to
this
too?
Yes. Yeah. Which I was confused about.
The one about the couch costing more than the tariffs? Was that it? There was a picture of fat JD.
About the couch with JD Vance. And
yeah, that.
It's like, it's too online. And it's like, I don't know. I don't know what it is about Trump when he does these things. And it's just funny and it makes sense. The sombrero thing is so funny. Even the people, even you don't like that stuff, Rachel. Even like people that I listen to Commentary Magazine, they don't like Trump a lot of the time. They disagree with him on a lot.
Yeah.
And they're like just laughing about it. They're like, oh, don't do the sombrero.
They're killing it. And the social media team over there is really doing very good. Like you said, it's not super online. Even the youths can get it.
and it's relevant. Like the one that they put up on Instagram, at least on all their socials, about their social media manager being furloughed. And it was this horrible, like 1980s, whatever. I showed it to my two girls who are not perpetually online. And even they got it. They're like, oh, I get it. It's so ugly because their social media manager's furloughed, but they're still going to make America great. So you don't have to be, you don't have to be inside the bubble to get Donald Trump's humor or even the White House's humor. It's accessible. And the Democrats are so like in their, in a little, like,
it's like they're in their head.
They're in a pod all together and like talking to each other about stuff, but not even like, nothing they're doing is relevant to.
Well, as much as people is relevant, they make it irrelevant. Like,
right.
Well, Kamala Harris, I was thinking about, remember last year, we were in the peak. Well, actually, we had been out of it by now, but like brat summer. And they're like, oh, she's just going to be like funny and relatable and brat. And this is going to bring her to the White House. And it's like,
no.
Okay.
Well, there had to be entire articles to explain what the heck that meant.
Brat is, yeah.
But it's like, they could have done something like that. Like, you could have done some funny, like her laughing memes with the brat thing with the green and with it behind it. And it would have been culturally relevant and it would have worked. But then they make it annoying and unrelatable where it's like you have an Atlantic think piece on like, this is why brat is. And it's like, just shut up. Like, I don't like,
no one's reading that. God. No one's reading it.
Why do you make like fun pop culture things unfunny and unrelatable? Like, that's so weird. And they still do it and they don't get that they're doing that.
Yeah, they turn it into an academic paper instead of being done.
Well, because they take themselves too seriously. They take themselves too seriously. They hold themselves in really high esteem and they think they're above it until all of a sudden they realize lots of Americans kind of just like that.
And here's the deal that I've always tried, and you and I have kind of debated this. Yes, it's frustrating because it's very uncomfortable and it's very new because in our lifetime, like, Trump did mean tweets, but now we have memes and AI for this administration. Okay. So now we have gone up a level and he is taking full advantage of it.
Yep.
And this type of stuff, like that meme, even though it is frustrating and people find it to be beneath the presidency, it delivers a message that is important for Republicans to get to the masses, to just general people. And it's easy to understand.
Yeah.
It's just easy to comprehend like what it is that they're trying to put out there. And it makes me think back to the days where for a long time, late night or like comedy was not how people got their news. And then eventually you had Colbert and you had The Daily Show, and then it was comedy, but it was how people were also getting their news. The difference is that we're getting it now from our president, which is a whole new plot. But this is a new way to get a general message out to the masses, which matters when you're playing the game of politics today, because people are online. Even if they're casually online, they are online. And that eventually will work its way through the different platforms and will deliver the Republican message to the masses. However, when you see Gavin Newsom dressing J.D. Vance up as what was apparently a minion, that took me a full 24 hours to figure out exactly what the heck that was about, that doesn't translate. And so that's, I think, one of the reasons why the Democrats are having such a struggle getting their messaging out. Like, believe it or not, the meme game is politics now.
Wait, you know what? Also, what you just said is so important about, like, this is how people relate and get news. You know what the most annoying, frustrating thing about the Republican Party of, like, 2012, 2013, when I was, like, just getting into things, it was, like, Obama would, and it wasn't, Obama wasn't doing the memes and stuff, but it was like the Republican Party of Mitt Romney would just respond with like a graph. And well, actually, you don't actually understand. And really, if you look into the statistics, this is, and it's like the Democrats have become that. And we have become, maybe it's kind of stupid and juvenile sometimes, but like, I don't know. I mean, the whole message that Republicans are trying to get out is that the Democrats are holding this up because of healthcare for illegal immigrants. And the chronically online people see the, oh, you're here, where it's like, you know, they say it's not happening, and then they say it is happening, but barely. And then they say, actually, it's a good thing that it's happening. But the general public, all they need to see when they see the sombrero is that, oh, yeah, the Trump administration said that this is for illegal immigrants. And now he's got a sombrero on. Ha ha. Sombrero. And like, Democrats are actually, they aren't illegal, or because they are documented, because they're asylum seekers. And I looked into
this. Nobody's
listening.
Nobody's listening. Nope.
You lost everybody after you stopped talking. You were talking for like 10 seconds. Everybody's like,
And by the way, for anybody curious, I looked into this law where they say, well, because they're playing this like semantics game right now.
Yeah.
Well, they do have documentation because they're awaiting asylum.
Or they have a temporary protective status or
that,
something.
When you look at the law, the like immigration and natural whatever law, if you're awaiting asylum, that does not mean that you have legal status and that you're protected here. And actually, ICE is able to detain you with that.
Correct.
So we can argue about whatever, but they want to do this semantics thing. I saw Caitlin Collins and Jake Tapper. Well, Republicans are saying this, and we know it's not really true because they do have no. But you guys are right. You've lost the argument. Haha, funny sombrero. That wins the argument. It does. It just does.
That is the state of our politics right now. We have succumbed to the sombrero meme, which has literally been all over my feed for the last 48 hours.
Yep.
I don't know. We'll figure it out. But I'm going to go ahead and start wrapping us up for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. You guys, thanks so much for hanging out with us today. If this is your first time here, make sure you hit that follow button so you don't miss another episode. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday, except for next week, because we have a secret operation happening. So stand by. And give Amanda a follow. All of her socials will be in the show notes. She is on TikTok. She is on Substack. She is on X. She is on Instagram. She's all over the place.
Thank you so much for having me. These are so fun to do.
Of course.
Sorry if I get
I only have so much bandwidth to cover all of the news. At this point, I'm just kind of like, I'm not even going to worry too much about the foreign issue because I'll just ask Amanda about it. It makes everything so much easier.
You can tell that all I do all day is listen. I work and I listen to these podcasts of people talking about procurement issues. So I probably should do something about that. But
we are all nerds in our own way. So... But that's it. That's all we have today. Here is a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay, bye.